Welcome back to Radio EcoShock 2009. I'm Alex Smith.
Down here on the corner of ruin and grace, I'm growing weary of the human race. Hold my lamp up in everyone's face, looking for an honest man. Everyone tied to the turning wheel, everyone hiding from the things they feel. The truth's so hard, it just don't seem real. The shadow across this land.
This is Alex Smith. You're tuned to Radio EcoShock on Green 960 AM, KKGN San Francisco. Last week, we thrashed out the triple crisis with Jan Lundberg, a former oil and gas industry expert. I say former because he left the Lundberg Oil and Gas Letter in the late 80s to become a voice for change. Jan's been an early warner on peak oil and our energy dependency. He also knows that climate change is going to rearrange our human game more or less forever. Despite the California fires, the new tent cities and car companies going bankrupt, Lundberg is an incurable optimist. He's long left his car behind to work on better alternatives. Today, we'll talk about the unstoppable changes coming our way, the transition towns, super low-energy consumers, people with vision. A lot of them gather round Jan Lundberg's blog, simply called culturechange.org. In part one of our wide-ranging discussion, Lundberg explained how a burp in our oil supply could multiply into a widespread economic and social breakdown in weeks or even days, no matter how much oil is still left in the ground somewhere. You can download that program as a free MP3 from our website, ecoshock.org. Look for our Green 960 show archive. Now we're going to go for more answers. Are we building lifeboats for a fortunate few? Or are these seeds of a whole new society? First, though, we need to know which Lundberg to listen to. Before we get to our real conversation, let's quickly sort out this confusion over the battling Lundbergs. I used the Lundberg publications back in the 1980s when I was looking into oil and gas, and it was a reliable source of oil and the whole industry. But now I find it's almost a front group for the American petroleum industry and maybe even Chevron. How did you and your sister Trilby end up on such opposite ends of the spectrum?
Well, she sort of diverged from the family tradition. Despite oil industry family business on statistics and analysis that we were running, that my father and I basically built, we were at heart environmentalists and very progressive people politically. And since she took the business, I think her allegiances to her paymasters and economic growth in general, the whole ball of wax, you just went for it. It's pretty puzzling and revolting to those of us in the family who had to witness this and listen to her.
Well, you can get on CNN, you can make a buck, but really, listeners, I just want to tell you, if you're looking for the real goods, look for Jan Lundberg. It must make you tear your hair out to see the Obama administration and governments around the world. They're doing the same thing here in Canada, announcing multi-billion dollar bridges and nine-lane highways and lots more paving just at the time when that's obviously the wrong way to go.
Well, it is, and there's a lot of jive associated with it, such as jobs. Well, if you want jobs, you fix the existing roads that would employ 10 times as many people. So it's really about the same old, the old boy network and speculators, high profits, expansion, urban sprawl, and they've just put a green face on it by saying, well, there will be a few more crumbs for bicycling and greener this and that, and maybe traffic will be functioning smoother if we pave everything over. So this is something people should not buy, but it's been going on for many decades, and it's not going to stop until there's either complete financial collapse or the kind of interruption in oil supplies that will bring about the final and largest aspects of petrocollapse, which I believe has already begun.
It could be eerie to see these gigantic roadways with people who can't afford the gas to drive around on them. They'll be rather emptied out.
Well, we bicycle activists have been saying for a long time that there's going to be a lot of big bike paths out there with plenty of room.
Well, I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock, and we're talking with Jan Lundberg, a former oil and gas insider, now proposing radical cultural changes. In fact, you call your website culturechange.org. Why do you do that?
Well, culture change seemed to be the key to what was puzzling us. In the late 90s, we noticed the best farmland being paved over. And we noticed on the family and individual level, people were so separated and stealing each other's inheritances and family. And all of this pointed to a value system that was way out of whack. So a change in culture has been happening. It needs to accelerate in a good way. And so that's what we chose, instead of to focus on energy or transportation.
I think you've got close to the core of the issue, in my opinion, because we have the facts now about peak oil and about climate change, and yet we're stuck in a rut, to use the old car culture language. We can't seem to change the way we think. That seems to be the big problem, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and we can only think in terms of what's around us and what we've been taught. I had a very strange upbringing. I was brought up on an organic ranch and sailed from California to Greece. And my father actually was doing something you're doing now, a broadcast journalist. And he had the first talk show on in television history in Los Angeles in the 1950s, a muckraking thing. So, yes, you know, someone like me has looked at the problems around us and the possibilities for a better way of living, and I've been happy to try to share that. Some people just go for it, even though they've had a very traditional, conventional upbringing, and they just go right for the changes. So it's sort of an inclination some of us have, or just the good fortune some of us have had to think differently, but that is really what's required. And questioning what we've been taught and trying to unlearn that, and then taking action, that's the other big factor here that is crucial.
Well, just for the sake of argument, some of the solutions you advocate sound like going back to pre-oil technologies and ways of life, and other people have argued that technology may not be reversible, that we're almost, you know, part machine ourselves now. So 6 or 7 billion people can't really go back to the land. How do you answer that criticism?
Well, it's absolutely true that we've outstripped carrying capacity to all go back to the land. So ultimately, when there will be a much smaller population size to you know, use sustainably what's available, we'll be closer to nature. Otherwise, we won't make it as a species, and we'll continue to drag others down towards extinction very rapidly. But when it comes to how technological we are and whether that can be turned around or not, I think people are confusing, you know, technology with energy and vice versa. So when we have had cheap energy, such as 100 barrels per 100 barrels of oil per one barrel that was input for the extraction, when that kind of net energy was possible, and it's not happening anymore, amazing things were done. And the chemistry of what can be done with petroleum has really been phenomenal and mind-blowing, but it has served to poison the earth and our bodies, such as what plastics do, and they're filling up the ocean, something terrible right now as we speak. It is important that we question the notions of progress and growth, which this civilization has depended on. But at some point, it's the end of the road, and we have to take a much narrower path of nature.
We're talking with Jan Lundberg, and another argument I hear, Jan, is that the current economic crisis that we're seeing in the Western world may actually be a rebalancing. We've taken for granted that most of the world's resources come to America or Europe for consumers. I can't believe we actually bought that as a model. But now some of that is going to Asia, at least, where people in India and China get some electricity, some roads, some televisions, and maybe some more consumer goods. Is there a kind of justice as Americans use less and others get more?
Well, you could look at it that way. You could also see a poetic justice in millions of basically native peoples coming from south of the United States border to repopulate what's known as the Indian, or in your country, the First Nation populations. But when it comes to other industrializing countries using more fossil fuels and stripping their topsoil and water supplies, this is simply an unfortunate development which will not serve them in the long run, and we all suffer the climate effects of those activities. And it's also true that in the United States we lose our skills and our resources and our means of managing our lives. When we become a third world nation of service employees, and we are obtaining products from far away, from people we don't know, shipped via petroleum, this is something that reflects a very quick change in our people. It's a generation of unskilled, unprepared consumers. And so when other countries are supplying the products, and they themselves are enjoying some of these products for the class of people that can afford them, then this is just part of the whole global change that has to do with manipulating nature and stumbling upon this bounty known as petroleum. But it's coming to an end. Peak does not mean the second half of petroleum consumption is unfolding. No, it is a completely unknown world we're stepping into, and it can be very rapidly changing.
It's unbelievable. You know, car sales in China were higher than in the U.S. last year, and they're building more roadways, and I understand that Buicks are really popular there, nice big cars. It seems like oil is almost a drug that gets people high, and then it kills them. It's like a disease that's spreading out over the world, I feel.
Well, sure, and it is an addiction of some kind. It's important not to focus just on petroleum, because a lot of people imagine, well, there's a clean substitute, we'll be able to continue our lives as very sophisticated scientific people, enjoying modern convenience and progress. This is something that is actually a dangerous and wrong-headed view, because there is no real substitute for petroleum with all its flexibility and versatility. And when people are depending on petroleum for their transportation and agriculture and the plastics, this is something that is crucial to recognize and to try to plan around, but to try to extend it is folly and is a big disservice to everyone. So we have to boycott and walk away from petroleum as much as possible, and that, I think, is probably the best social movement, a strategy for rapid change, and to kick the system where it hurts and begin to use our own resources and capabilities in our own smaller communities and cheat the corporations out of being enriched.
Well, according to the latest news, the people who own the big corporations have been cheating the taxpayers, heading off to Switzerland.
Don't let me down when the great correction comes.
This is Green 960 AM in San Francisco. I'm Alex Smith, your host in Difficult Times. Our theme music today is The Great Correction by Eliza Gilkyson. I put in a request to interview Gilkyson, who more than paid her dues getting the real raw into her music. Check out her MySpace page for classics like Runaway Train, which in my opinion explains our whole situation right now, right now. Speaking of fossil fuel funerals, we're going to get some great guests coming up for you. Richard Heinberg, the original Party's Over guy, will tell us about his new book, Blackout. Everybody figures when the oil runs out, we'll keep the lights on with dirty old coal. Think again. Heinberg says these coal reserves aren't there, and we couldn't burn them if they were. Or what if gas goes to $10 a gallon? $20. Author Christopher Steiner will tell us about his new book. We'll also talk poor white trash and ecocide with Gonzo writer Joe Bagent, author of Deer Hunting with Jesus. That's coming up next week. Tell your friends about Rio Green Radio every Sunday night at 10:30 right here on KKGN San Francisco, 960 AM on your radio dial. Let's get back to Jan Lundberg, well known in California, but now living in Portland. Anybody who looks through the web or reads the papers, the headlines keep coming along, unheard of events, things that are so jaw-dropping, I could go away for 2 hours and think about that one thing, but there's 20 of them. And at the same time, I can't escape this feeling of stagnation. We aren't changing much. The government can't do much, as Katrina showed us. And the same crooks run the banks and the stock market. It feels like suspended animation, but a big storm is raging outside a solid plate glass window. And it feels so ominous to me. And I know a lot of people are worried deep down. Are you sensing that?
Well, yes, there's a bit more of that. But being basically an optimist, I think that it's liberating to view things in a stark fashion for the first time. If people can picture modern humanity as mostly slaves, with another good many of us living off the sweat of others, then it puts a different light on what's going on, instead of here's a news item on some scientific breakthrough. The corporate media serve to distract us. So if we're able to change our lives and keep moving in a direction of liberating ourselves from the thuggery of those in charge who are dressed well and speak so well, it's still oppression and exploitation for people and nature. And to reject that and to work with those who see a better way is quite pleasurable.
You've talked about several good ideas that could give us hope. Can you expand on that a little bit? What are some of the ideas that are happening on the ground in the real world that you know about?
Well, as I mentioned, when we can link people together with a local food supply, and people are cooperating and bartering and not commuting off into the distance, wrecking their health and the commute, and earning dollars to trade for things that should be free in nature anyway, or produced in their community, these are trends that actually are rather hopeful. And it's all inevitable. You can lament the loss of this technological boom and all the convenience. You can say, well, I need my car. You can say, well, maybe some more oil will be discovered. But all of this is quite inevitable in the direction of a real community culture. And so you see things happening like you've heard of the 100-mile diet. Well, here in Portland, some people are practicing the 5-mile diet. There are some community gardens in former front lawns. We're trying to hook up with bike carts and sailboats, a system that will allow people to have some food security. Now, we have around, you said I was in California. I was until several months ago. I'm in Portland, Oregon nowadays. And we did demonstrate that a lot of food can be bike carted, and we got some of it delivered with sailboat as well. There is so much to integrate, so many pieces of the puzzle that are good developments and hopeful, that it will create a food security system where distribution is by appropriate technology. And there's an ethic here to really eat local. It is such a point of pride. The average restaurant is featuring local vegetables and fruits and meats whenever possible. It's just sort of a bubble in the United States.
Well, you know, you've really inspired me here, Jan, because I had the feeling that there's nothing we can do to stop the decline and the destruction. But you've also brought up the point that there's nothing we can do to stop the healing and the rearrangement that humans will make.
Yes, and it's really our true nature. We lived in a tribal communal fashion for, oh, you can trace us back to 200,000 years roughly. And this is what we knew. We didn't know the corporate state or environmental devastation except by natural forces. And so if we have to go back, as someone might call it, at least what was known in the past was the closeness of the village community, people working for the group, and having the extended family, which if we look around in North America, it's supposedly some great mark of independence and accomplishment for us to be so isolated and for families just to see each other on holidays.
Well, I know that's changing, and I'm working on my own family relations, and I think we're seeing people moving back in with the parents due to the economic situation or, you know, for a variety of reasons. As I say, I think there are unstoppable changes for the better coming as well. We're going to have to wrap it up there. I'm Alex Smith. You've been listening to Jan Lundberg on Radio EcoShock. I check Jan's website, culturechange.org, pretty well every day to get a sane alternative to that mainstream news. Thank you for joining us, Jan.
Thank you so much, Alex. It's been great.
Join us next week, won't you, for Joe Bagent. I'm Alex Smith. This is Radio EcoShock. Say, have you seen predictions for the end of the human race, like 2033 from John Doscher at the New York Green Fest this summer? No matter what the source, I'm collecting predictions of our doom date for an upcoming program. Send your entry with a link or reference to follow up to radio@ecoshock.org. I need to know when to pack my bags and stop paying for all that health insurance. And grab a whole bunch of past Radio EcoShock shows as free MP3 downloads from our website, ecoshock.org. Once again, thank you so much for listening.